You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Must Hear Before You Die. This episode, we're talking about Sinead O'Connor, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got. In the room, I have Anne.
Hey.
Rob.
Hi.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Hello.
I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got is the second album by Irish singer Sinead O'Connor, released on March 1990. Ensign and Chrysalis Records. The producer was Nellie Hooper and Sinead O'Connor, and the genre is rock and folk. I'm going to read from All Music Review, Steve Huey. I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got became Sinead O'Connor's popular breakthrough on strength of the stunning Prince cover Nothing Compares to You, which topped the pop charts for a month. But even its remarkable intimacy wasn't adequate preparation for the harrowing confessions that composed the majority of the album. Informed by her stormy relationship with drummer John Reynolds, who fathered O'Connor's first child before the couple broke up, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got lays the singer's psyche startling and sometimes uncomfortably bare. The songs mostly address relationships with parents, children, and especially lovers, through which O'Connor weaves a stubborn refusal to be defined by anyone but herself. In fact, the album is almost too personal and cathartic to draw the listener in close, since O'Connor's projects such turmoil and offers such specific detail. Her confrontational openness makes it easy to overlook O'Connor's musical versatility. Granted, not all of the music is as brilliantly audacious as I Am Stretched on Your Grave, which marries a Frank O'Connor poem to eerie Celtic melodies and a James Brown funky drummer sample. But the album plays like a tour de force in its demonstration of everything O'Connor can do. Dramatic, orchestral, ballads, intimate confessionals, catchy pop rock, driven guitar rock, and protest folk, not to mention the nearly 6-minute a cappella title track. What's consistent throughout is the frighteningly strong emotion O'Connor brings to bear on the material while remaining sensitive to each piece's individual demands. Aside from being a brilliant album on its own right, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got foreshadowed the rise of deeply introspective female singer-songwriters like Tori Amos, Sarah McLachlan, who were more traditionally feminine and connected to a wider audience, which takes nothing away from anyone. If anything, it's evident that when on top of her game, O'Connor was a singular talent. All right, what do we think of Sinead O'Connor? I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got.
I was very surprised. I only knew her off of the Prince cover, and I never listened to the rest of the record. This is a treat.
Yeah.
This is a really strong record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really surprised too, just how consistent it was throughout. I mean, sat down and listened to it and I was like, oh, okay.
Consistent, but also just she's doing whatever the fuck she wants.
She's bringing in everything. Yeah. When it got to the song with Funky Drummer Loop over poetry,
and then like the Irish jig.
Yeah. I was like, what is going on? Oh, I thought this...
It gets kind of wild sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the second track?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I was listening to the first track and I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. I mean, it was kind of what I expected. I'd heard, you know, you hear some Sinead O'Connor on the radio and it has a very like soothing, emotional, heavy weighted, you know, vocality about it. But once it got to Funky Drummer, I was like, wait, what?
Right.
Like, what are we doing now? Like, is this
In 1990, they don't put out your album unless there's at least one funky drummer.
Okay. On okay. It. There's a hard rule about that.
Yeah.
On topic, off topic, as of the 30th of September 2022, a mere month ago, the Prince estate denied Sinead O'Connor's documentary the use of Sinead O'Connor's version of Nothing Compares to You.
Wow.
That's bogus.
Yeah. Citing that Prince's version is better and she doesn't deserve to to use it.
I don't understand what you're saying, though.
But the song exists.
The song
they licensed she it has for it. All the stuff, right?
And she's not allowed to use it in a documentary. So whatever she did.
Okay, I see what you're saying. New
things have to be re-approved. And
it appears to be that
allowed.
Way. Yeah, and
Prince is Prince, not around to
Prince's
give it the
go-ahead. Sister is the one who's like, no.
But you can't have a documentary about
the documentary is literally called Nothing Compares to You.
Amazing.
And at the end of it, there's just a title screen saying the Prince estate did not allow us to use the song.
So you watched it and it was like, amazing. Oh man.
Wow.
That's wild. He didn't start performing it until she made it super famous from what I read, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, not only, but he was writing it for his.
The family.
Not even, his material. It was like a spinoff, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fantastic song, but I would argue that she does a great job making it her own, right?
But most people would agree with you, and I guess except for Prince's sister. But I think what confuses me most is, regardless of what your opinion is on whose version is better, why can't she use it?
Strong agree. I don't understand either.
Might be some Jehovah's Witness issues with the conversion to Islam or the
I'm sure
Catholic
it's not
shit,
that. It seems like it's probably like
maybe they weren't paying enough money.
Yeah, maybe they didn't want to pay enough, or maybe mm-hmm. they didn't want to give them like a cut of whatever they asked for. It's hard to tell.
I don't know. The specificity of her version is not as good as my brother's.
She doesn't
deserve it. I'll pull up the actual
dude. I think that it maybe speaks more to like mourning than anything else, but I think we all agree that her version is excellent and beautiful, and that's why it was a huge hit on the radio mm-hmm. all the time. And like the reason, the main reason I knew her, I knew Mandinka too, but like I hadn't listened to her before.
Sounds cool.
I listened to this for the podcast, and I really enjoyed it. Her vocal capabilities are just wonderful. Like it's amazing how much. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, the way she sings, I mean, it has a bit of an accent, which is charming, I think, for me at least. But she is very, very talented in the way that she is she vocalizes things. And it kind of brought me back a little bit to Kate Bush's, vocalizations and just being kind of in awe of what she's just doing plain and simple with her voice, because the last track, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got, is just her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all
vocal.
It is.
Yeah.
And I, at no point was I like, oh, they probably could have put a little like piano or violin or, something backing that. I was like, no, this is great. This is just how it is. And the only other artists we probably had some albums, but Terrence Trent D'Arby was like one of the only other artists I think we've had that just was like very, very focused on the vocality of what he was doing.
Yeah. Bjork will pick that up.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think the Dreaming kind of paved the way for some of the oddity or like the big scope of what she attacks throughout this, right?
Yeah.
It never feels like one thing only.
Yeah. At this time, I was reading, the mainstream was, for women at this time, it was like between schoolgirl role models like Debbie Gibson and Tiffany, or hyper-sexualized icons like Madonna or Samantha Fox, or safe pop like Whitney Houston, Lisa, things like that. And so for her to come out, beautiful young Irish singer,
but also her head is shaved.
Head is shaved. She wears, her look is like big baggy clothes.
Mm-hmm.
That is like.
She's rejecting the idea that she needs to be sexualized. Yeah,
yeah, right. Exactly. And so her where she was like trying to fit in. When that song came up, Nothing Compares to You, it was, I don't think she said as much as like, I don't know where I was. Like, I was not in the same place that these other singers who wanted that sort of stardom, like to create that stardom. She just kind of had it happen to her.
Yep.
Yeah. Because it's a torch song. Like, it's very,
right,
very sexy. But yeah, it's kind of different than the way that she presents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she had always said that she was a protest singer for survivors of child abuse. That was like her, that's her, you know, mission statement.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
I respect that.
Yeah.
We're listening to Three Babies right now, which is a heartbreaking song.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like she's so, it's breathy, but it's actually not like, it's so controlled and supported too. I think that's something that I find really interesting about her voice that you can hear in this one for sure.
Sorry, just enjoying it.
Yeah. I've said similar things when we've been covering like early 90s hip hop recently, but I remember when this stuff came out. I remember I was a kid, you know, in small town Indiana when Sinead O'Connor ripped up the picture of the Pope on Saturday Night Live. And like, I remember in like my young existence and my limited access to perspective, I remember Sinead O'Connor was like, she was like a villain. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, much like Chuck D, like much like NWA. And just as an adult, you know, like revisiting this stuff, like, this album that came out in 1990, and this person is not a villain, you know. Like, this person might be talking about some hard truths. I'm not saying that she's never said anything regrettable that she hasn't had to walk back, but like the way she chose to present herself, the way she chose to use her platform, like all of this is so conscious and thought out and not coming from a bad place. It's coming from a place of a desire for improvement, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I absolutely respect that. And man, she just got such a bad shape in the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
It's wild. Like, I didn't, when I was reading about this, like, she was put in a Magdalene asylum when she was 15, I think,
mm-hmm.
Which I didn't even realize they still existed that far into the 80s. Yeah. But I do remember her being villainized for sure. Like, that was
absolutely
like, why would you ever do that? That's so offensive, right? Like, was the whole line that I heard about that at the time. And then the more I learned about the stuff around it, the more I was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
What a brave statement to make.
I said nothing can take away.
Said too that she was not only, you know, she wasn't alone in that sort of new generation that was coming up, right? So around 1990, it was Wilson Phillips and Roxette were sort of the popular female singers, but then there was clearly an underground of like Mudhoney, Nirvana, Jane's Addiction, like all these things. And so, and obviously Public Enemy, you know. And so it did feel, there is a bit of a change in the guard. And we're going to talk so much about, you know, how grunge, you know, really like moved the needle
mm-hmm.
or moved the sort of music sphere. But it wasn't just that, you know, her presentation of this folk music, protest folk music. I mean, this is the same stuff that, you know, other folk artists were doing earlier. It's just the next generation.
Like, she's engaging politically from a really large pop like platform, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it.
You know, shortly after that, the Pope picture incident, you know, she was performing at, what was it? It was like a
Bob Dylan tribute concert at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Kris Kristofferson introduces her and she starts getting booed. And then Kris Kristofferson walks to the center of stage with her and whispers something into her ear. And then she continues. But
says, don't like let the bastards get you down.
I love it. I love Kris Kristofferson.
Yeah. I think she said, I'm fine though, right?
Yep. Yeah. And she said, yeah. I'm fine.
I love it.
Yeah.
I hope those two kept in touch. I like the Kris Kristofferson, Sinead O'Connor connection there.
Yeah. I'll get into the SNL then. 3rd of October, 1992. So this is, kind of a year.
2 years.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. O'Connor appeared Saturday Night Live as a musical guest. She sang an a cappella version of Bob Marley's War, which she intended as a protest against sexual abuse of children in the Catholic Church, referring to child abuse rather than racism. She then presented a photo of Pope John Paul II to the camera while singing the word evil, after which she tore the photo into pieces, said, fight the real enemy, and threw the pieces towards the camera. The incident occurred 9 years before John Paul II acknowledged the sexual abuse within the church. The audience was completely silent, no booing or applause. Executive producer Lorne Michaels recalled that the air went out of the studio. He ordered that the applause sign not be used. As of 2016, NBC broadcast reruns of the episode using footage from the dress rehearsal.
Not the actual
event.
Fucking cowards.
Because she used a different photo for that, right? Like, it was not.
Yeah, she pulled a Houdini on him. I forget what photo she said she was going to rip up. The one she ripped up on the dress rehearsal. It was definitely not the Pope.
Yeah. During the opening monologue the following week, Catholic raised host Joe Pesci held up a photo explaining that he had taped it back together to huge applause. Pesci also said that if he had been his show, I would have gave her such a smack.
Jesus. Oh, Joe Pesci, oh my God.
2002 interview with Salon, when asked if she would change anything about the SNL appearance, Connor replied, hell no. In her 2021 book, Rememberings, O'Connor said of the incident, everyone wants a pop star, see, but I'm a protest singer. I just had stuff to get off my chest. I had no desire for fame.
Yeah.
Preach.
And I don't think anybody, after, you know, obviously all John Paul II came out and was like, yeah, but. All that stuff, sexual abuse. Yeah,
he said it 9 years after she.
That happened. I don't. Yeah.
It's 9 years later. Right. When he finally.
Right. I don't think anybody was like issuing an official apology to.
I mean, the church continues to like Sinead O'Connor. Yeah. I don't know. Vacillate on some of that, right?
Yeah.
Just keep shipping these assholes around to different parishes.
Right.
Man, growing up Catholic was fun.
So what is your opinion of this? How do you feel about it, Rob?
What about the... dude, fuck John Paul II.
Yeah.
Fuck every pope. Fuck them all. They're all just a bunch of fucking pederasts. I don't give a shit.
She has asked every pope therein to excommunicate her from the Catholic Church.
Yeah, no shit. Like...
Can you do that? You can write the Pope a letter.
I guess you can request it.
I don't know. It's fucking worse—a fucking pederast or a fucking like a person in power allowing a fucking predator to go to different places and continuing to do the shit. It's
the Pope
insane.
Sets the policy that affects the entire world, right?
I don't think I think the Catholics might be third in line for most people, but yeah, just say the idea of like a Catholic getting the vapors because their God talker like got his picture ripped up is just so fucking stupid. Ugh, gross. But no, I was in Catholic school when this was happening. I was like, scandal.
Right.
It was so scandalous.
Like, but I really like that song she sang. Well, I guess I don't like Sinead O'Connor anymore.
Yeah. I just didn't, I had no nuance around it. And then eventually it changed when I learned more stuff, right? As I got older. But man, I do remember that villainy.
Yeah.
What a bummer.
Even Madonna jumped on the sort of persecution, being like, oh, that's not the proper way to discuss it. If she wants to talk about it, then she got called out by other music, you know, writers that were like, oh, now Madonna's found God. Now that like her she has a new album that's being overshadowed by Sinead O'Connor.
She puts her foot in her mouth
Right.
And it's transparent. And nobody, it's like she never apologizes. I feel like whenever her foot's Sinead.
Transparent.
It's transparent why she's putting her foot in her mouth. Mm. But I feel like Sinead O'Connor, like, if she says something that maybe isn't exactly to her intention, she will own it and, like, change course on it. And that's something else when reading about this that I found really refreshing, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I said this, but I didn't really understand the situation fully, and I apologize. Or I was really upset. That's why I said this. A different tack, right?
The fact that we're back in a weird spot of satanic panic and everything. Like, yeah. I just want to go on record and saying that, like, as far as the cabal of child molesters is concerned, it is the Catholic Church. It still is. Fucking knock it off.
Yeah, well.
And I'm done. What song are we on now, guys? Are we on
Black Boys?
Right now we're listening to Black Boys on Mopeds, which is a phenomenal song.
This is about the death of Colin Roach in London in 1983, who was murdered by police at a police station.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. It was ruled a suicide, like a death by suicide, but...
Yeah, he was... bullet wound to the head in the entrance way to the police station.
Right, yeah. So, yeah. And I think that the lyrically, it doesn't, it's like widely acknowledged that it's about, like it's inspired by that case, but it's not lyrically specifically addressing the details of that.
I didn't think the Bulbies were allowed to carry guns.
The album is dedicated to the family of Colin Roach. And there's a picture in the liner notes of Colin Roach's parents like protesting with like a poster of Colin Roach. The Black Boy on Moped reference is a few years earlier, a guy by the name of Nicholas Bramble, a black British guy, was riding his moped and started being chased by police because they thought he had stolen the moped. He's running away from the police because he's being chased. He gets an accident and he dies. Turns out of his moped the whole time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And police had no probable cause to start chasing him other than the color of his skin.
Well, that's not a probable cause, right? Like,
well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the point.
Yeah. I'm just helping with the language because I know what you mean.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And just after this song, I mean, beautiful song. It also mentions, you know, Margaret Thatcher. We're gonna get Nothing Compares to You, which is just, it's so interesting to have this album where she has these, yeah, essentially protest songs that you would hear on Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, you know, early work and stuff, and then all of a sudden be like Nothing Compares to You, which is sounds like a soft ballad of the 90s, right?
Well,
early
90s. But I feel like it's like all tied up in her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was talking about her mom.
Exactly. That. Yeah.
That's what made her cry.
Yeah.
There's famously she cries two tears in the video on camera, which I remember as a kid. And I'm mm-hmm. like, wow. Wow. Yeah. Like that, like it's like a 9-year old that moved me.
Yeah.
You know, there's because you know, there's no shot beforehand for someone putting like eye drops in her eyes. You know, she's sitting there like a single shot staring at the camera, then all of a sudden she just starts crying. And yeah, I guess it's she was thinking about her mom, who had passed away, who she has such a tumultuous or had such a tumultuous relationship with. But that line of the song where she starts crying is a, you know, all the flowers that you planted in the yard, mama, you know, like they died after you left, like, and then the tears come down. Oh, it's so touching.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm going to give you the quote anyway, since it's in our cans. I didn't feel Sinead deserved to use the song my brother wrote in her documentary, so we declined. His version is the best. Unquote.
Wow.
So?
That's just like your opinion, man.
Exactly.
Even if that wasn't subjective as fuck, it's no reason to deny someone else the use of a song that they already have, you know?
Established.
But let's just say the song is... beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Just so good. So, so goddamn good. Didn't know it was 5 minutes and 10 seconds
doesn't
long.
Feel like five minutes. No, it feels like 2.5 minutes.
Has a beautiful, I mean, it's up there with Berlin. It's got those beautiful, just like 80s drums.
Yeah.
And that synth that just, it's great.
I like the choir, the
Is that a real choir?
I'm sure it's like a synth choir, right?
Yeah, I was wondering.
I don't know.
Put enough reverb on it. Everything sounds like a real choir.
Great plan. That's
not true. When they're asking about her mother, and she says a lot of songs on the record were really about her. Even the fucking title I got from having a dream about her. And in this dream, she said to me, I do not want what I have not got. In my mind, even nothing compares to you was me thinking about her. The Emperor's New Clothes was actually about you two, believe it or not.
You see that Andy Rourke of the Smiths plays bass on Emperor's New Clothes?
Yeah. Yeah, but I did notice, I was very impressed with her credentials on the album. Vocals, acoustic guitar, electric guitar, keyboards, programming, arranging, producer, and string arrangements. All Sinead O'Connor.
So she's doing so much of this work.
She's
right?
doing a lot
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is her second?
Second album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's very impressive.
Obviously, you know, yeah. Jaw Wobble also shows
up. He shows up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did see that.
On the
That's
last
cool.
day of our acquaintance. And yeah, Andy Rourke on Emperor's New Clothes, Jumping the River.
Who's Jaw Wobble?
Public Image Limited.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because the other producer was, right? Or somebody from...
Nelly Hooper.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there's...
Mama!
She went on to, you know, have a lot of, what'd you say, collaborations with... Many, many famous
people. Well, and
even
at the time, I think she was doing a lot of work mm-hmm. with people and doing a lot of soundtrack work. Like, yeah. I think there's another track on this that is from a soundtrack. Jump in the River is from the soundtrack to Married
to
the Mob.
I liked that song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's that Jump into the River is what you do if you're being affected by the Harry Nilsson song Jump into the Fire.
Okay. Counterpoint.
Do you think it was a response song?
also used in soundtracks featuring the mob. Yeah. Jump into the Fire is heavily used in Goodfellas.
Yeah. She won the first Grammy for Best Alternative Music Album, but boycotted the show.
Music performance. She rejected all nominations and her win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of award shows, so a couple years before this, she was performing on the Grammys when Mandinka was working its way through the college radio charts. And she had done some late night TV, but this was her first like primetime introduction to America. It was when most people first encountered Sinead O'Connor. Yeah, so she comes onto the stage. You know, she's got her shaved head. She's got her like black tank top and baggy jeans. Tied around her waist, instead of like a grunge flannel, is her toddler's onesie, which is like a statement where like people were saying like, you can't be a mom and also do this. She's like, well, I'll perform in the Grammys with my top.
A toddler onesie yeah, around it, her it, fucking
it,
waist.
It didn't tie all the way around her waist. It tied to like some of the belt loops on the back of her pants.
Okay, good.
But then also, so the hip hop award, if I'm not mistaken, was not televised. It was not part of like the televised Grammys that year. And on the side
of course
of her,
it wasn't. Of course not. Fucking assholes.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Right. So she's performing on the Grammys, and painted on the side of her shaved head is the Public Enemy logo, which, even if you don't know what that logo means, is just such like an arresting image to be painted on the side of someone's head, like a target, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then if you do know what it means, it brings like, she's using like every part of her platform to communicate different things.
Yeah,
you know?
That's great.
And then a few years later, Living Color When they came up to accept an award, one of the guys from Living Color was wearing a Sinead O'Connor picture on his shirt. It was like a year she wasn't invited or something.
Oh, that's awesome. Amazing. Yeah. I fucking love that.
Yeah, to bring it back to Public Enemy, Hank Shockley, obviously their producer, remixed the album or remixed the song The Emperor's New Clothes for a 12-inch that was coupled with a Celtic funk of I Am Stretched on Your Grave. So
that's cool.
That's great.
Got the connection from the episode we just did.
I love it. I love it. She so like so much of middle America, at least from my experience, was like vilifying her. But like on one hand, she's making connections with Hank Shockley. On the other hand, she's making connection with Kris Kristofferson. Like she's found like this common bond of people speaking. What was it? Speaking truth to power, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Album. Twice platinum. 2 million.
Double Z's.
That's so many millions. That's so much more than 1 million.
Yeah. It's twice as much.
True.
So much more.
So much more.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was, this was such a treat to I don't think I would have dipped in either. I don't think
No. There wouldn't
in a couple
a
years,
in
I would have
life.
Been like, oh, hey, let's go back and check out that Sinead O'Connor album that did really well. Just not on my radar.
Nope.
Yeah. But obviously, you know, we're listening to a song right now that's just like, it's like a pop song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's good.
And this is the one from the soundtrack, right? Yeah. This is Jump in the River.
Jump in the River. Yeah. Just the variety on this album was really something. My favorite thing I read when doing research for this was, while her shaved head was initially an assertion against traditional views of women, years later, O'Connor said that she had begun to grow her hair back, but that after being asked if she was Enya, O'Connor shaved it off again.
Excuse me, no, I am not.
No, I'm not Enya.
Fine, I will shave my hair again. Beautiful.
She says, quote, I don't feel like me unless I have my hair shaved, so even when I'm an old lady, I'm going to shave it.
That's awesome.
She grew it out a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I saw some pictures just when I was like doing research this week. It's hard to recognize her with hair. She has since shaved it again. Unless I had been specifically Googling Sinead O'Connor, I don't know if I would have known that I was looking at a picture of like 50-year-old Sinead O'Connor with hair.
I think it's one of those things where you associate it like in your mind, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. We were just like Elvira. When you see Elvira out of makeup, it's like, oh yeah, it's
her. Cassandra Peterson?
Yeah, Cassandra Peterson. Exactly. But at the same time, it's like, it does take you a minute to like, be like, is that the same person?
But also at the same time, you're like, you're 70. Yeah. How is this possible?
She's still half 70.
She's a vampire, so she's immortal, right? Yeah,
exactly.
I'm going to read you just a little bit of Kreisgau's review on this one. Basically, not since Patti Smith has anyone had a better chance of defining rock, not pop, in a specifically female way. She's just the right mess of emotion and savvy, crudity and sophistication, fury and independence and love. If there's anything older news than a 20-year-old who's angry at the world, it's a 23-year-old who's discovered life is worth living. But all that means is that if she can withstand the media flood, this won't be all that hard to top. How can she possibly know what she wants when she's only 23? And gave it a B+. She didn't withstand the media flood.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And yeah. It was a.
I mean, she keeps making stuff.
She does. But maybe it's more to do with the labels didn't want to deal with like the attention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In 1983, she wrote a public letter to the Irish Times, which she asked people to stop hurting her. Quoted as saying, "If only." I can only fight off the voices of my parents and gather a sense of self-esteem, then I'll really be able to sing. So, repeated accusations of abuse by her parents when she was a child, which her brother did acknowledge that definitely her mother
was abusive
emotionally and physically. Yeah. So, but yeah, I do think it just speaks to, you know, someone who gets famous so young and probably wasn't expecting any of it.
Mm-mm.
You know, we've had that in this book before where it's like, what do you even do? Like, you're on every cover, every, you know, television, and it's not part of like your identity.
I'm interested. Everyone seems pretty positive about this. Is anyone going to listen to more Sinead O'Connor
albums?
I think I will, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah,
I checked in some of the newer...
What was that like?
It was good. Yeah. It was more... I mean, it's kind of what I thought it would be. It has sort of like a poppy edge, but it has... It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
In listening to this album and kind of tying it back to Kate Bush, who... I think we all kind of loved it. Her voice is like kind of carrying me to those, even if I'm not as interested in the sort of a production that's going on or the.
Yeah. Her voice is so engaging. I feel
exactly.
Like
I
would be interested in other albums just because of
right.
her vocal.
Delivery. Is anyone familiar with the one before this, the Lion and the Cobra?
Just me? Mandinka, that's the only,
yeah. I love that song. So
I love it too, yeah.
I'm actually curious to hear more of that one.
That one actually Kreisgau gave an A.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
For whatever. For whatever this asshole's opinion is worth.
It's fun to have a through line, at least.
It's interesting. I personally loved it. Like, I think that this is crazy how only one single, right? At least only one that I ever heard. Like that Prince single was the only one that ever...
I think
ever...
there were three singles.
On were there one. Actually four?
But I didn't fucking write them down. Oh, you
which
do
is,
you have them.
Which is funny. The first one is Jump in the River. Well, it kind of makes sense. I mean, the movie was probably...
Yeah.
You know, maybe Al... it was actually released October 88. So that must have been recorded before.
Mm-hmm.
Unless she's a time traveler.
Yeah.
No, I think she was doing a lot of like...
Yeah.
That kind of worked too, and
yeah.
That one was maybe they thought it had enough pop
and then,
sensibility. To...
Nothing Compares to You was the obvious, you know, single when this came out, and then Emperor's New Clothes, and then Three That's Babies.
Okay, yeah, okay. Those didn't hit MTV or the airwaves on our side, with the exception of Nothing Compares to You, which you could not escape in the Midwest.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
I think I liked I Am Stretched on Your Grave the best. That was my favorite.
Cool.
It's cool.
I mean, Nothing Compares to You is obviously fabulous.
Yeah.
That was the one that like really struck me and was a surprise, right?
Yeah. That one
that was gorgeous.
Jump in the River, I was like, I just was really, yeah. Those two, I Am Stretched and Jump in the River, I was just like, wait, she's like a pop rock, you know, singer. Like, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the closing track, I was like, this is amazing.
I really liked the penultimate track, Last Day of Our Acquaintance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought I wasn't expecting it to kick in and be a rock song around 3.5 minutes into it.
Right.
Because I was enjoying it as like a quiet, like introspective song. And then it kicks in. I was like, oh,
you got me.
I like this too. Yeah. I liked you before the drums.
but I like you even better now.
With the drums.
Yeah, she's got she kind of has the Sandy Denny thing going on too, right? From Fairpoint Convention?
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, you know, I've been...
It might just be from the region.
Nah, the entire time I've been thinking, like, you know, I would love to hear her cover, My Dreams Are Withered and Died. Mm.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Everybody on the positive?
Oh, fuck
yeah. Absolutely.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Really yeah. Enjoyed it.
It's really good. We're not going to get any more Sinead O'Connor, but I'm happy to have her in the book.
For sure.
Seems good.
Yeah, I'm happy to have been turned on to this record. I knew the song. I'm happy to have listened to the other 9 tracks.
It's old enough. You might be able to find it in a dusty bin at this point. So
that's true. But probably on compact disc.
Ooh, true.
We're in that era now.
Do you guys, if you want to ride around in my Honda Fit, I have a compact disc player in there.
Ooh, oh, snap.
You're welcome to come have a ride.
All right, next time we'll be talking about A Tribe Called Quest, People's Instinctive Travels.
Ooh.
All right, thanks, y'all.
Shocked by the deaths that took place in Beijing. It seems strange that she should be afraid. offended. The same orders are given by her. I've said this before now. You said I was childish and